Welcome to Holden Village. Today in the Fireside Room, the speaker is Mary Scott Boria. She will be speaking on That's Not Me, Busting Up Stereotypes. So let's listen in on Mary Scott Boria.
What I would like to do is to have you grouped into groups of threes, because I have three sets of questions that I would like for you to think about. And I think to make this fair to you, if we could do that now, then I will sort of give you a question that you can hopefully focus on to some extent while you're watching the video. So how about, let's say, if that group back there would be group one, okay? And let's see, this group here in the middle would be group two. And maybe we could have a couple people join over here to make this group three. And then you can maybe join with group two there if you like.
Oh, okay.
Three groups.
I would say groups was three.
I'm sorry. I might have said that. Three groups. So
I love people in the middle group. Change that in the end group.
Well, this group doesn't have many.
Hold on, let me just give you this
one.
I'll give that to you.
Okay.
Have a few folks over here. I will talk about these three points in addition to some others. So what I'm going to do is go ahead and start the video.
Standing there, but John just barely skirts the fringe of the department, back and over, and joking, laughing, and that did not happen to me.
Even when the two men stroll into a nearby car dealership, Glenn walks up to a new car right in front of the showroom window. Once again, we run the clock.
I walk around the car, take the tires, look under the rear at the muffler. It seemed an enormous amount of time for me to stand there and wait for me to spend my money.
It was clear as a day in the day.
Yes, there was a black salesman who looked and then looked away.
A black salesman? The same salesman who was there in an instant, the moment John set foot on the lot. What about that, salesman? Julianne Malvo and Clifford Alexander both study the social and economic consequences of race in America. She's an economist at Berkeley. He's a consultant and former Secretary of the Army.
Here's my question. It's the same life lesson that the white salesman got. That this is a group of people that, for some reason, I should be able to get them, despite the fact that I might make some money from them.
That different treatment became apparent in another way when our two testers went to a record store. John browses quietly. So does Glenn. That's him in the background. But now, watch the salesman approaching from the left. He stops next to Glenn. He's not offering to help him. He's tailing him.
I moved, he moved. And I think after about the second or third time that that happened, it suddenly dawned on me. He is there strictly to follow me around.
I was surprised to see the train in line in the shop because they were walking on the train with me.
The salesman followed Glenn around to that store. Men like that would say to you, this is not racist behavior. Black people commit more crime as a percentage of population. That's why I follow them.
Do you think that all 32 million black people should be judged by some statistics about crime in this society?
No, but the question is, what kind of blame do we put on
it? It isn't a question of blaming the white person following. It's a question of understanding why you follow.
If this man had behaved suspiciously, if he had picked up something, put it down, perhaps put it toward his pocket, that would be working. He would go.
Nearly every day or night, someone treated Glenn like an outsider. For instance, one day, we locked the two men out of their cars, 40 feet away from each other. Glenn struggles all alone to get into his car. John, on the other hand, held a small crowd of passers-by, offering information and help. And you?
Nothing. No help, no one.
One night, John and Glenn go for a walk in downtown St. Louis, one just ahead of the other. But when a police car passes by, it's Glenn who gets the pointed once over.
I mean, that's where John went. He's going right by them.
So he stopped and leaned out the window. He's going to stop you.
Yes.
And on another night, walking on a residential street in White South St. Louis, a truck slows down next to Glenn. Our microphone picks up the man leaning out and telling Glenn he's in the wrong neighborhood.
Hey.
The implication then was we were not where we were supposed to be.
Which is in the north part of St. Louis, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
So you're constantly doing this calculus of what am I going to do about it? Am I going to tell them to shove it? Am I going to walk on by? Do I have the time and energy? What is the cumulative effect of it? How bad is this thing in there? The karma kind of racism is your feet somewhere out there. They said, gee, that's not crop burning, and yet it's still grinding, exceedingly small.
Every day, John and Glenn keep diaries, and the grinding is clear when we stop to ask about those impressions.
You think you could make it here, so probably?
Yeah, I think that I could make it here, and set up here if I wanted. Knowing what has happened to me, I think I would be fairly discouraged.
At this point, already?
Yes.
An emotional price is one thing. It's still another when the price is money out of your pocket. At a car dealership, John was told he could get a car for almost nothing down. Glenn's told he'll need at least $2,000 down. Is it just a fluke? They try a second lot. they decided to ask about the same red convertible with the same salesman. First, how much of a down payment will be needed?
What do you mean, ma'am, down? Anywhere from 10 to 20%.
Well, normally the banks want anywhere from 20 to 25%.
Already, John's advantage is as much as $1,000. And what about the price of the car?
You could probably pick it up for somewhere around the 9 range.
9? Maybe you'd like to issue the car for, say, 95 even.
Once again, a big difference. Since we heard all of this from the van, we decided to get out and see if we could get some answers. The manager met us first.
What do we got today?
So we talked to John about it. And then that salesman appeared, and we asked him why John and Glenn were quoted different figures.
Well, they're all different.
Two guys come in with the same car. What's the difference? For him, the bank will do 10 to 20. For him, 20 to 25. What's the difference?
Depends on the vehicle.
Well, they're looking at the same vehicle.
We never did get an answer.
Is there a difference?
And we're not the only ones asking that question. Experts say car salesmen consistently regard blacks as less sophisticated customers and try to make them pay more. The result, according to a national study, black Americans pay twice the markup that whites do, at a cost of more than $150 million a year. And another way African Americans pay for the color of their skin is job discrimination. Over several days, John and Glenn applied for all kinds of jobs, signing up for job services, answering a want ad. Once again, from the very beginning, we noticed something subtle but unmistakable. Not just what happens, but how they're treated.
Calls one of them after Don.
At a storefront job service, both our testers pay a fee and sign up. John is told pleasantly it's against the rules to share a confidential job listing with a friend. But when Glenn gets that information, it's a lecture, complete with a little warning about laziness.
I'm going to look at your job. I'm going to monitor you real close. If I have people coming here, give them a good job list, they never show up. They never show up.
Are showing up or drug abuse?
Quite often, in a lot of situations.
More than once, John is encouraged about a job while Glenn is turned down flat. This bright leading business is advertised for help out front, the counter. Since John and Glenn have dealt with different people, we ask them each to go back a few days later to see if the same thing happens. It does. Glenn is told. John is told.
When you talk about a person's work, that's life-threatening to them. That's what they do.
At this point, there's only one more area to explore. John and Glenn need to find some place to live. Right off, we start hearing something different. The building manager gives John a relaxed description of the area.
So you are being kind of welcome to the neighborhood.
Yes. Whereas I felt like I would be in boot camp, and he was a drill instructor.
That's true. I'm tough. I do know. We're right.
He also made reference to the fact that he wanted to keep his building clean because it's not ghetto.
There were other building managers who seemed perfectly cordial and businesslike.
What's included? All of this gas and electric?
We furnished all of it.
Glenn left satisfied he had the same chance as anyone else at getting this apartment. But 5 minutes later, John arrived. Listen.
So far, pretty good.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah.
Have a nice day, Mr. I'm serving. Let me show you this place, and I'm not going to do anything illegal. As soon as we're gone, one of them is just here.
And this is what happens when John and Glenn spot this sign at another apartment building and go in to inquire. John goes first.
Well, what does that mean?
The manager gives John a set of keys.
The keys is over to the master. Okay.
John tours the vacant apartment. He's told it's available immediately.
Got a couple other things on the other thing. I got to try to find this one on the map or fill it up. Okay?
I appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Unless you know the day.
John leaves. And listen what happens when Glenn walks in. Suddenly,
the apartment has been rented.
The manager explains that regrettably, early that morning, a woman paid a deposit on the last available apartment.
Oh, probably early this morning.
There's nothing for Glenn to see, so he leaves.
Right, you did. Okay.
Once again, we decide to go in search of an explanation.
May we ask you a couple of questions? These two gentlemen came in, and when this one came in, to get the keys to the apartment, one of them was there from the other. When this gentleman came in, 10 minutes later, he said there was no apartment available.
No, I know this gentleman had a call from the apartment.
But we pointed out what he had said. He had told Glenn the apartment had been rented by a woman that morning. If he showed John the apartment, he asked him.
Oh, ma'am, I'm not French. I get Mexican. I get Jewish. My God.
How many black people are in the apartment?
There's none.
At this point, a building owner appears, trying to throw us out.
I'm asking you, Mr. Kimmel, that out of the apartment or possibly to you, okay? We are never discriminating. As long as they don't have four or five kids, we do not have any kids.
Out. Later, Glenn remembered the manager's parting words.
He said, bless you both. And that infuriated me. How dare you wish blessings on me after you have just insulted me, after you have just told me that I can't live here because of the color of my skin.
We will have rules to step forward when the white people feel abandoned and abandoned and outraged about this as we do. We're not surprised, but whenever this is confronted, I'm confronted with our neighbor.
You're sitting there in the box and you want to say, Jane or Johnny, you can go all the way to the Tolkien. This is a miracle. But you know what just happened to you in this story. And you know that that's a miracle too.
In quite a few ways, yes, it has been rough.
After 2.5 weeks, our investigation is over. And even these two professional discrimination testers say this was an experience that opened their eyes.
I didn't realize the big difference in all the situations, and I couldn't really believe it then that it happened. You walk down with a suit and tie, doesn't matter. You carry yourself in a very respectful manner. It doesn't matter. Someone will make determinations about you, determinations that affect the quality of your life. And the only basis is one thing that will not change about you. I'm not going to take off black skin. I'm going to be black forever.
A footnote. We chose St. Louis for this report, but we think it could have been any city, and the National Studies on Discrimination bear this out. That's why our experts, Malveaux and Alexander, both wanted to emphasize that they think if things are going to change for black Americans, it will only be when national leaders in business and politics say, this can't go on, it's just not fair. And finally, after we completed our interviews with John and Glenn here in New York, we couldn't resist just one more test. We take the two of them just a few blocks from our studio as they each try to catch a New York cab to head home. Watch as the first cab sails straight past Glenn to pick up John.
Please.
Describe what happens to each of these young men throughout the experiment. Okay. Basically, it was I think the key point was that it was a very subtle form of racism. That it's the type of racism that is, in a sense, human, but in a sense, it's also within society and it's a problem within society. And it's a type of racism that really can't be measured as such when it's through comparative studies. Statistics don't really reveal this type of racism at all. That was one.
Okay, so what happened? What did you see happen, though, to each of these young men?
Well,
what did they experience?
Yeah, I mean, what a blow to your self-esteem.
I just get told, like, time and time again that, you know, either can't do this or not helped or, I mean, ignored. It seemed to me that the white man's self-esteem would be heightened every time it affirmed.
Mm-hmm.
Every time he went into any place, and the black man's wouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
Even in terms of opportunities, I mean, for the black man, he just kept getting knocked back all the time with regards to jobs, looking for housing, things like that. It's just, you know, no hope, so to speak, really.
Mm-hmm. What? Anything else? Anybody want to add anything in terms of what they saw happen to these two young men? And this was 2 weeks, I think?
About after a few weeks, where they would be the one, the white fellow would have a job, would have a place to live, would have, you know, $1,500 more in the bank after he bought the car, whereas the black person was still out of job, out of place to live, and I've had to put so much more money in to buy a car.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I would disagree that it's subtle.
Yeah.
How many times have you been shouted to out the car window?
Right. Okay.
To not
yeah,
be where
really
you are
yeah.
in your
yeah.
life.
It's subtle in the fact that
it's not subtle.
Well, but in some of the instances where you can't, I mean, yeah. I don't trust car people in the first place. That unless I had something to compare it to,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't think it's because. I mean, I wouldn't know that.
No, I mean that when he was walking down the
yeah.
street.
Yeah. Oh, that's not subtle. Yeah, that's not subtle.
But I think the point there about subtle. Was that if really you were to remove the white subject and focus instead then on the black subject, would you be aware that racism
well,
was
yeah, like
in action?
The car, and
the car service. Would you not instead think poor service, lengthy time in the car in the shop there, didn't receive good service, blah blah, etc. etc. No apartments, they're all taken. The fact was that we had a comparative study here and we realised that there was racism.
Well, there was that time when the person shouted out from the car.
Right, okay, so you have one instance there, yeah. But, I mean, car drivers, that sort of scenario, you could be whatever. You could be wearing the wrong type of baseball cap.
Because if I'm not helped, I don't think it's because I'm white. I think it's because they're not doing their job or something.
Because they're rude or something. Mm-hmm. Oh, two little kids.
Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that both men were surprised by the racism, mm-hmm. even the black.
Yeah.
So it took a comparison from the sea extent of it.
Yeah.
And also that the black car salesman treated the black man
differently
than the white man. So
there's 5 minutes later or something.
Right. Well, because we all internalize the same.
Right.
The same attitudes, regardless of the color of our skin, we receive the same. Information and we internalize the same information, and he obviously felt like the white guy was probably more capable of buying a car, so I'm gonna sell a car to him than I am to a black person. But I thought it was really interesting how it was so subtle, so difficult to really sort of measure the impact, but that you could see over a period of time what the impact on someone's personal self could be.
The subtlety issue, you know, we've seen that, or we've seen that change in the time of the human rights activity and so on. 20 years ago, there would have been a sign on the front of the apartment that said no blacks, just a total blatant, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been a lot of other places, and there was no subtlety at all. Now the legislation has passed, and everybody's just a wee bit afraid that they're going to get attacked legally if they don't behave, so they found other ways to do it, such as
the
early morning call and the shadowing and all the other things that happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
So it has become subtle. It hasn't, the attitude still exists. They just.
Mm-hmm. I had an experience when I first came here. My daughter and granddaughter and I missed the boat at Ceylon. And we missed it by probably half of a second because the plank hadn't come down yet. And we drove up and they wouldn't let us on the boat. And they hadn't pulled off. And again, the plank was still up. So they could have stopped and let us on the boat, but they didn't. And they said, well, you'll have to go to Fields Point. Well, we were in a taxi and that was, you know, that ate up our little bit of money that we had to spend. But it was really interesting because I had a real quick, but I totally discounted it, feeling that if I was white, he'd let me on this boat. Well, I'm not sure if there's someone in the room. I told this story to someone else, and they asked me, well, did you see that as racism? And I said, my reaction was, no, I didn't see that as racism. I think they just sort of wanted to get on with it. And of course, you know, you got to keep your schedule. But it was real interesting because there was another gentleman who actually is staying in the same place that I'm staying, got to the boat late, and they had put the plank up, and they stopped the boat, put the plank back down, and let him on the boat. And I totally discounted that it was racism because, of course, I mean, I'm an African-American person. I don't want to walk around and think that every little infraction is because it's racism. But I told this story to someone. I don't know if I told this to you, and someone said you should get the name of the boat company, and when you go back, write a letter. And I almost feel like, why? I mean, what, you know, and what's really interesting about what I think my reaction is that I feel to some extent has to do with race is that I have white friends who would not think twice about complaining that this would happen.
Yeah.
But I feel like I don't have a right to complain because of course I got there late. And of course people have to make their schedules. And of course, you know, they can't stop for every person that gets there a half a second late. You know, and I don't know whether or not that was an experience of racism or not. I don't have a way to sort of judge that. However, the cumulative effect of those kinds of things certainly makes one feel like, ooh, you know. And of course, the person who came and stayed in our place, you know, got on the boat. Now, he was a singer the other night, so they might have said, this is our singer, he has to get on the boat, you know, or else we won't have a show. But it was, the difference was that he was a white man and I was a black female. And they totally accommodated him and totally disregarded. And totally disregarded the fact that we were in a taxi. Mm-hmm. And the guy said, just go to Fields Point. Like, you know, it's $2 up the road. Just go ahead and go up to Fields Point. So, I mean, it's sort of like, I don't feel affirmed. I don't feel like I have a right to complain. Because if I complain, then, you know, it's sort of, you know, how dare you call everything racist, racism, or how dare you? So that, you know, that's just sort of how subtle these experiences can sort of accumulate into, you know, really feeling like you don't have certain rights that other people have. And I love being around my white friend because I take a lot of lessons from her. I mean, when something happens to her and she doesn't feel it is right, and she complains and I see how that works, I try it. Because sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work. But I think John, what I saw in John is that John had a great sense of freedom. He had the freedom to move around. He felt, you know, okay in certain places. You know, as you said, he was affirmed and sort of, you know, the hearty handshake. How you doing, John? You know, great to have you here. Whereas the other guy, Greg, was just totally ignored. You know, and maybe he didn't have, you know, maybe if there wasn't some comparison, that would not be something that would be. But, I mean, you can walk in a store and know when someone's following you. I mean, there's a real big difference between someone just sort of standing off on the side, you know, not wanting to be so intrusive, because we know how sales clerks are that just sort of ask you every 5 minutes, can I help you, can I help you, can I help you, and someone who's actually following you. I mean, you really can tell the difference between the two in those situations. So I think, and it's what's so insidious about this is that it is very subtle. And it is very difficult to grab a hold of. Whereas 20 years ago, it was very much out there, it was very blatant, and you could figure out what is it that we need to do. But now it's very difficult to do that because it's so very subtle, and you can't, and you're always second guessing yourself. Was this an experience because of the color of my skin, or you know, my gender, or whatever other discriminating situations? Anything else in terms of what the two men? All right, how about the second group? Could you read what your question was?
Our question was, what are the stereotypes that are raised by the individual situations and some of the stereotypes we discussed are lack of trust, inability to pay, not take care of property. Mm-hmm. What else?
Less capable of understanding.
Yeah, I thought that woman in the employment agency, she just sort of had to really kind of emphasize, you know, you better make sure you understand that I know that you guys don't take these jobs seriously, so you better know that I know that. But these are all real classic stereotypes. I mean, they're not. And this was done in 1992. This wasn't done 20 years ago. This is a very recent video. So, I mean, these are very prevalent stereotypes.
I would like, it's what I think would have been a good follow-up. I'd like for them to go back, I know it's not possible, but to interview the perpetrators, if you will, individually, and ask them, were you aware of what you were doing? Mm-hmm. I think some of them, of course, would never answer honestly. Some of them wouldn't answer honestly, they denied. But, I mean, I think some of them were consciously biased. Mm-hmm. I think
the woman who had the apartment for rent seemed to be clear about not wanting, you know, strange people, especially those with children.
With five children.
With five children.
Yeah. But I wonder if there are others who, when presented with this, would have gone, I didn't really.
Were there any that you thought might have that reaction?
Maybe the car salesman or shoe salesman. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I put myself in that situation. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, I mentioned this with you, if it were shown to me objectively how I help people in my job, I wonder what would come up. Mm-hmm. If I'd be really surprised or pleased or what.
The thing is, it's not even based on any kind of rational principle. I mean, you look at statistics, and I mean, of course, a lot of them lie, but more white people commit crimes than blacks, and more white people are on welfare, and all these stereotypes we have, I mean, we tend to just generalize or something, you know, to the entire black population, but it's still, we should be afraid of, because there are more white people out there committing crimes than black people, we should be afraid of every white person, or there are more white people not paying their bills than black people, because the population is higher.
Well, it's pretty dramatic in this video. Part of that is that the blacks have trouble with employment. I don't know. It's amazing to me that I think, you know, when they went back and talked, especially to the man who was the manager of the apartment building, I felt that he very definitely knew what he was doing. Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty obvious that he knew what he was doing. He was lying to these people. Well, like, in fact, they had him lying.
And the director.
Yeah.
I'm sure he was lying. He may not have known that it was racism, because in a way, racism is like a screen or a filter through which, and it's two ways. So everything that we perceive that's coming in and goes out is through this filter. And I don't think we're aware that this filter is in front of us. necessarily. You may say, well, it's not racism, it's economic. It's economics, and it's this, and it's that, and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So he may be telling the truth when he says, you know, I don't have a problem with racism. I have Jews and whatever Mexicans, you know, renting from me. It's not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
He may be completely blind to his racism.
Probably they'd ask him, how many Jews and how many Mexicans do you have living here? He probably wouldn't have come up with any. I mean, it sort of sounded to me like I don't know, but it sort of sounded to me like he was just sort of coming up with a quick reaction to what, you know, feeling trapped and pushed into a corner.
Another thing that was disconcerting, too, is that it was not all another stereotype. Elderly people who grew up with it this way and they're never going to change anyway, they were very young people, the salespeople, and they were middle-aged and they were older.
Mm-hmm.
And they were both black and white.
Right. Right.
Because we've had 25 years of affirmative action.
Right. I mean, we legally have done away with racism, right?
Mm-hmm.
We legally, sort of, we legislated it out, but somehow it's still
young
coming.
Young people are doing the very same thing as they were.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think racism at the legal level exists. If you check the statute, there are clear legal policies, laws, etc., that are followed, that have to be adhered to, and that have theoretically stamped out racism. Racism instead is at a social level, and I think you have to look deeper. There are other issues, it's not just a matter of law. I suspect that it's two very important issues concerning racism. Would be education and economics. Definitely. I think that's probably as, you know, you're talking about direction, I would say that is two areas that have to be worked upon, especially education and especially economics, where, for example, salesman who was there, I suspect that had it been a comparative study of a male and female, he would have gone for the female and made her pay a higher price. If I was a salesperson, I would have gone for the female and made her pay a higher price.
Mm-hmm.
You've got that's
kick him out of here.
That's, you know, that's very crude. You know, I know it sounds very crude, but that is economics. You're going for the highest price you can get for your product. You're not going to go for a mediocre price. You're not going to go for its lowest price. You're going to go for the highest price you can get. And if you know your market, then you know where, for example, to have, let's have Wisconsin dairy, you know, dairy state of
California.
U.S. or California, but we'll just say Wisconsin. People are used to dairy products, so if you're going to sell, if you're, say, from Europe and you're going to sell a dairy product to the United States, you're obviously going to try and hit the Wisconsin market, where dairy products are common. Or commonplace, it's a big market. The bigger the market, you go for it. And that's, you know, you've got to know your market. So I think then, for the salesperson who was there in the trying to sell the car, he knew that, you know, it could be in a risk because this is a black person. Black people aren't as rich as white people, or we perceive them not to be as rich as white people. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. I don't have the statistics in front of me. So really what you have to see is more black people in business, more black people earning more money, living in better conditions, living in better housing, so that, you know, it's not just a white middle class community where you have white professionals, you have a mixture of white and African American professionals. It's a mixture. You're seeing it's commonplace, and that's where you have the economics.
So there was even that black person, the black car salesman that was doing the same.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. You have principle of economics there. Dog eat dog.
Yeah, I would challenge you on you know, I think any of these things could be called economical issues. The person who didn't want to rent to a black because historically blacks tear everything up and cost me a lot of money. You know, other people will not move into my apartment building because blacks don't want to wait until next door to a black. I think the problem is ethical, not economic, and I think it's business ethics is the root of it, you know, and what our society is about. And when you say that you would go for the woman, and you know, I'm not sure if that's what you would actually do, just because you think you make more money on that person, playing on vulnerability. I mean, that's, you know, that's not ethical.
No, that's not ethical, but then really...
I mean, it's the reality maybe, but it's not ethical.
Yes, okay, I mean, there's business ethics and business ethics. You, just to look at it, that, you know, it is a perverse way to look at it, I don't disagree. But you are, again, you're going to go for your target, you are going to go for the highest price.
Well, it almost sounds like what you're saying is that racism can hide behind a lot of other things.
Oh yeah, racism. It's not. This is not. This is just one. This is one area.
Economics,
you know, this is economics. Is one.
Put different labels
yeah.
on.
So if you're aware of this within business, you say, well, look, okay, it's fine to be going for the highest price, but do you realize what you're doing to society by doing so? Mm-hmm. Bringing the issue of ethics. Once you're aware of it, then people might say, well, yes, you've got a point. Actually, maybe the highest price is not always the best price. So you have to be aware of these things in order to tackle them. If you try and sweep them under the carpet and say, no, business is not like that, we have business ethics, blah, blah, etc., etc., you're not dealing with the issue. So and that economics is just one part of this equation. There's much more to it than just economics. There's education as well. Mm-hmm. And there's law.
It sounds like economics is about one of the bigger parts of it.
I would say so, yes, especially in America.
I never thought of it as economical, but you deal with salespeople and you deal with people wanting to bring in the money, and black, white, whatever, economics.
Yeah, you can't buy it or they're going to steal something from you, or you're going to lose sales because of it. I mean,
oh, yeah.
I think that's the three things that are common in every one of those situations. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you're going to, in that car salesman's place, and if it's economics, that car dealership was willing to not sell a car. Mm-hmm. Because the person was black, that's not good economics.
No, but you're looking at, then you get into the area of risk management. I mean,
that's not risk management. He's got GMC insurance behind him.
Right. Okay.
Oh,
but what we're looking
shit.
At, yeah, what we're looking at here, though. Okay, what we're looking at here, okay, is it. Salesperson, you're looking at the target, you're looking at your risk.
Oh, bullshit.
It is, that is. You ask any salesperson, okay?
It goes beyond that, though. We were just to a bed and breakfast where the proprietress was definitely hoping to get certain clientele.
Yeah.
Yet throughout the stay, there was that clientele there, and she continually insulted that clientele. And so that's not economics.
No, that's.
And yet, if you approached her, she was brushed off. Oh, you know, it's just
right.
Her experience, and that's not economics. So there's goes a lot beyond economics, and also that blind again. What you consider yourself, you accept in yourself.
Yeah.
Or not aware of.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, even if you're aware, if this person's husband told her about it, and she still brushed it off as well.
I think we get back to the stereotypes thing.